Welcome back. It's Tom Bell here. And on today's episode, I'm bringing you an absolute legend, Paul Francis. He's an author, a coach, a speaker, and an Ironman. I'm super pumped to have you on the show, Paul. Welcome.
Well, that is a fantastic introduction. Thank you very much. I'm really hoping now I can live up to the hype for that intro. I'll do my very best, but really great to be on here and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, well, you are a very consistent, person, and I've been fortunate to know you for quite a lot of years, and spent a lot of time looking up to you myself as an up and coming aspiring leader. And I loved a whole range of things, but one thing that constantly I bring into my world is the thing about limiting beliefs, and it's something that I certainly took away from my time learning from your style, but. For people who have not yet come across you, could you please tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, my story, like everyone, I think everyone has a great story. And what I really enjoy is finding out about people and what their story is about. I think my story is a little bit different in so much as that I was an English migrant. My parents dragged me to Australia as a 17-year-old. Much to my disgust, to this day, God bless them, they passed, unfortunately. But to this day, I do not understand how they made that decision. But it probably set me on a course, really, that hardened me up a little bit. I mean, I arrived in Australia. We didn't have the means for me to go to university or anything like that. So I found myself at work pretty quick in retail, which is not something I wanted to do at the time. But as a 17-year-old, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And my career took me through retail. It took me into banking and finance. And then I had a long period of time, as you know, at Heritage Bank, 20 odd years as a retail executive there. Fantastic career during a period of enormous growth and some exciting things that happened, which really led to me to have that real passion for good leadership. And the skills and things that I learned along that way were really fantastic. In addition to that, I've always had a real passion for health and fitness. The reason I didn't do all that well at school was I did a lot of sport. So I was a good footballer, soccer player for Australians. I ran and all that sort of stuff and continued that on. And I've sort of had that sport for life mentality. I've continued on with that, played A-grade soccer when I came to Australia. I ran at a fairly high level, ran a lot of marathons. I don't know how many, probably around 50. And in the last 20-odd years, I've gone into triathlon and believe it or not, completed 20 full Ironman triathlons amongst a whole stack of other stuff, which has taken me to some fantastic places, made me meet some really great, passionate, driven people, and even had the opportunity a few years ago to compete in Kona at the Ironman World Championship. So very briefly, that's me. In the last couple of years, I've moved away from that full-time career. I got to the point where I thought if I'm going to do some things for myself, now's the time. So in the last couple of years, I've done some coaching. I've got a number of coaching clients. I really enjoy helping people in that way. I do some consulting, so I'm running sales leadership workshops. And in addition to that, a little bit of public speaking as well, which I really enjoy. You'd have seen me do that in the past, Tom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've also, this year, we, along with a previous work colleague, we actually self-published a book called The Leadership Question, which was quite an exercise and something we're pretty proud of. So in a nutshell, without going on, that's me in a nutshell.
And like, that would have to be the world's biggest nutshell. I mean, if a nutshell could contain Paul Francis, it would be a giant one. Because and just like even hearing all of that things, like that's something I've learned that I didn't know that you'd come over here when you were 17. And that's a a big deal in itself to completely change countries. And it may not have been your choice, but to land here and hearing your sort of coming through the different sports and different things and your path through banking and whatnot, it's quite remarkable. I remember hearing a story because it's interesting to hear of you being such a strong runner and doing marathons and whatnot and thinking that that mindset has been there, has been a central theme throughout your life, it would seem. But then to hear that you had got dragged down to the pool that time and couldn't swim, so to end up being able to do 20 Ironmans, like even one Ironman is absolutely massive. A half Ironman is massive, even though it's got the word half in it, it's still a massive
nothing
event.
Nothing half about it.
That's exactly
There's a couple of points there, Tom. I think you're right. When I look back now, and it's interesting, you see what defines you as you go back. When I think that just, you know, I really wasn't the most academic student. I don't think I'm stupid by the same token, but I certainly wasn't that academic. But I think that when I look back at the sports I did, I think that probably laid the groundwork for good work ethic, being resilient, planning and executing, you know, where you want to get to. I think that probably was the thing that once I started work and realized that, you know, I had to work and I had to build a career, and even though I didn't know where that was going to go at that point in time, those sorts of things, those sort of disciplines probably helped me, because I didn't have the discipline from the study to start with. So that probably helped me. And the other thing you mentioned there about the swimming, I mean, it's, as you know, that's a funny story for me, because you, the thing about limiting beliefs and you know, people making excuses is something that is really strong for me. And that was one lesson that I really learned, where, you know, a friend said, you know, let's do a triathlon. I said, oh, no, I can't swim. And he said, well, you know, it's a 400 meter swim. And I go, no, you don't understand. I can't swim. Now, my belief was I actually couldn't swim. In fact, I actually couldn't swim. But I guess the point was that, you know, I taught myself to swim. And that overcoming that one small, well, small thing, it was a big thing at the time, but overcoming that led me to all the other opportunities that proceeded on from there. And it's almost like one of those, I refer to it as those open door moments, where someone says, why don't you do this? And you say yes or no. If you say no, you don't know what opportunities you're going to miss out on from that point on. If you say yes, then it can open up a myriad of different experiences that you can have in your life that you may not have thought was possible. And certainly, if I'd have sat back, if I'd have been talking to you 20 years ago and you'd said to me, oh, Paul, I think that there's 20 Ironman, or there'll be more Ironman in your future, I would have said, I don't know where that's going to come from.
Mm.
But that one decision made all those things possible.
I like that. When I was a kid, we had these books called Goosebump books, and I think it was the Goosebump books from memory. But you could turn to it was oh no it was like Choose Your Own Adventure book. It might not have been Goosebumps. It was Choose Your Own Adventure, and it would, at the bottom of the page, you'd be like running down a tunnel, and you can turn left and go up the stairs, or you can turn right and go down the stairs, and each one took you to a different page in the book, and then the story would continue on. It was really interesting, but it's much like that in life. Like, you know, you come against these moments, and then you turn, and how could it have been any different? Like you might have pictured your life at 16 that you're going to be somewhere in you know, in your former country doing something else, and the next thing you're in Australia working in retail. Like, and you could sit there and think that this is the worst thing that's happened to you and it's bad, and dwell, or you can just get on with it and live your life and find
exactly
that, make the most of it 100%. So, you know, and which is a tricky thing, because you're in this life where being an executive in a bank, like, far out, you're minted. Like, that is, could it get any better than that for someone who is a career banker or any sort of career professional, to make it to the C-suite or to that level, and to be so successful like you are, and to have grown that business with the others there like you have? Like, I mean, Heritage is a force to be reckoned with. I still love Heritage now. I've got a lot of respect for the business and how easy it is to do business with them. But, you know, you're in that role. Like, how do you like muster up the courage to say, no, actually, I want to go, and this is the time. Like you mentioned before, this is the time to go and be a coach and be a speaker and pursue that. How did you muster the courage to do that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and for some people, it's just a mindset thing. And I guess that I'll answer that just in a moment. But I guess that I get frustrated. I have been frustrated over the years when I talk to people about the potential of opportunities, and they'll bring up barriers like it's now's not a convenient time, or you know, it's not quite what I'm looking for, or stuff like that. And I guess that for whatever reason, I think that I was probably influenced early in my career by a couple of people, and that the idea of having mentors, I didn't understand they were mentors at the time, but for whatever reason, I must have been receptive to it. And I came across a couple of people, and early in my career, when I probably wasn't, this is in my retail days back at Meijer, believe it or not, I remember one of the state managers saying to me, look, Paul, it is very, very simple. You can choose. You can either have a good attitude, You can work hard, make something of yourself, and have a good life, whatever that might lead to or not. It is that simple. And, you know, at the time I thought, right, okay. But, you know, it really kind of stuck with me. And from that point on, I stopped second guessing myself when opportunities came up. So I had 9 successful years in Myer, for example, and I was at that level where I was about to be considered as a store manager in Queensland, which is a pretty big deal at the time. Mm. And I thought to myself, I'm 27. Is this something I can see myself doing forever, or do I need to see if there's anything out for me? And I decided that I needed to, because I didn't have the education background. I didn't have a school that I could call on where I've been here all my life, and decided to try something else. I saw, believe it or not, a job advertised for the ANZ for a graduate program. Now, I wasn't a graduate, but I decided to apply for it anyway. And I got in, and that led me on that next part of that journey. And then each part along the way, there's been those sort of door moments for me. When I was been at Heritage for a while and I was a regional manager, I remember the then managing director, Paul Layoff, calling me up and saying, look, considering you for this position as a regional manager on the Gold Coast, he said, you'll need to start here, but, you know, go away and have a think about it. And my mindset was, well, what's to think about?
Mm.
But yes, I was living in Brisbane. Yes, it would be commuting and a few other things, but it never occurred to me that I would not take that opportunity. And every time I've taken an opportunity, it's opened up different things. So I'd like to say that I had a very clear idea of where my career was going to go, but it really ended up being, I guess, the way it evolved was that each step I took an opportunity, I worked hard at it, I learned myself, I learned from people around me, and then I took the other opportunities. And as my career progressed, then I was able to provide that guidance and knowledge and use that experience and the stories that I had back to other people as well. So it's no more complicated than that. The tough part is actually making yourself do it. And we're all the same. We all have fears. Whenever we take a jump to do something, we have all the things that could possibly go wrong, all the things that could make it difficult, rather than saying, right, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to do it. And I can tell you, when I took the big jump from a regional manager to the executive role at Heritage, my first response when I was told I was successful was, wow, that's fantastic. My second response is, oh my God, what have I done now?
Mm.
Am I good enough? Am I going to be able to do it? How am I going to fit in with this group? You know, I'm the only one that's not highly educated in this group. Am I going to be inferior? All those sorts of fears. And you have to say, no, I've won the job on my merits. I'm going to stick to my strengths. So I'm going to learn everything else as I go along. And you know, be confident that you can go to people. You've got a lot of experience and take that experience from them and build your own skill set as you go along. So I guess that's the way that's always worked for me.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. So the imposter syndrome or the self-doubt comes up in your mind. Mm-hmm. I'm loving that you will take a leap of faith and it's almost jumping off the cliff and building the wings on the way down. And I suppose even if a decision turns out to maybe not, you know, you jump into something and it doesn't work out, well, that doesn't mean that you can't go and change again. It's things no, aren't
you've learned know,
permanent. Yeah, yeah. And that's an interesting thing. But is there something in your mind where, like, when those self-doubts are coming up and that process that you're going through to override that, are you in a position where it's like you start to hear yourself doing that? Is it like a period of time and then you're like, hang on, let me get into manual mode here. I'm in automatic. The self-doubts have arrived. And then you override. Like, what's the process to kick out of, to override the negative thoughts?
I guess that for me, the main thing is to be self-aware. So not be afraid of it, just accept it. For example, if I look at my hobby, if I look at Ironman triathlon, when I can tell you, even though I've done 20 of them, when I line up on the morning, I'm standing there on the beach in my wetsuit thinking, what on earth am I doing here? I mean, I know what the day is going to be like. I know what's going to unfold. And I think it's those negative thoughts in your head that everyone get. You've just got to quiet them down and you've got to say, what is my purpose for being here? What do I want to achieve? And how am I going to handle it when it gets tough? And in that environment, I just say, when it does get tough, I I have this mantra in my head that I go through as the day goes on, and it might happen several times a day, and where it gets to really be really tough, and I'm thinking, this is hurting. Why am I doing this? You know, this is not going as well as I'd like. And the things I say, which might sound silly, and it's just a mantra that works for me, is firstly, no one's making me do this. I'm really fortunate to be out here. Really fortunate that I'm physically, mentally capable of getting to the start line and participating in this event. The second thing I say to myself is 5 minutes. So I'm going to not allow myself to slow down or you know, I keep myself going for 5 minutes. And the third thing is, what do I need to do right at this very minute to help myself? Do I need to hydrate more? Do I need to get some more fuel on board? Do I need to, you know, put slightly less power down, whatever it might be? And you know what happens within a few minutes, you've forgotten about that and you're just back in the zone where you were before. And the same thing when in a work environment, you've got to say, you know, I'm here. What needs to be done? What can I do right now? And I think that a lot of people, and there's a lot of stuff about mental health at the moment where I think a lot of people allow everything has happened to them to try and carry it around all the time. Mm-hmm. And what I learned in my working career was that you need to bring back to just what it is you have to achieve right now. You know that this stuff's over here. You know that at some point you're going to have to get to it. You know you've got deadlines. But what do I need to do right now to get me to where I need to get to at this point in time? And just bring everything back to what needs to be done immediately. And straight away, that takes an enormous amount of pressure off what you're doing and allows you to feel in a zone. And in as getting back to the original part of your question where you said, you know, how did I cope with those self-doubts? I always fell back to is, well, what are the skills that I've got now that I'm contributing in this environment that make me be here? Everything else, if it's something you don't know, well, you don't know it. But in the meantime, you just, you know, depend on the skills you've already got, the experiences you've got, and everything else just comes along. But it's just taking that pressure off yourself.
Yeah, I really like that. I love how it's the limiting belief thing. I think it really feels core to who you are, because of all of those other that you could come up with a million reasons why you can't proceed or can't push ahead or can't make something happen. But really, ultimately, you need to come back to like if it's purpose and driving you or whatever else. But it is being present in the now with what action takes me a step forward. So moving away from the beliefs that are holding you back to a belief or an opinion or an action that's going to step you forward, or it could be taking steps back, but it's taking some action that's actually to get you to a better position. So that's a magical skill to have developed.
Yeah. What is the one thing I can do right now? I mean, I found that when I first got into a leadership position, and when you're talking to someone about performance, I found that generally what would happen is they give you all of the reasons why something couldn't be done. You know, we tried it before, you know, I know I've already been out there and done that. All of these things that can't be done. And I mean, I don't know why I developed these skills, but my logic part of my brain was saying, well, they're all things you can't do. What's one thing you could do? So if you're not performing, what is one thing you can do or might be able to try that would actually make things better? And then all of a sudden, all the other things disappear into the background, because predominantly, they're usually excuses. Some of them might be valid, but most of them are excuses. Just digressing for a second, I don't know whether you know this story, but talking about bringing stuff back into the present, I know that you know that I'm good friends with John McLean. A few years ago, after 25 years, he started to learn to walk again. I'll cut the story short, but so he went back to the Nepean Triathlon, which was where he started his triathlon career before the accident, and then went on to, you know, do world championships in a wheelchair and swim English Channel and a whole lot of stuff. And so anyway, I went down to compete on the same day so I could be there with him, and cut a long story short, finished the race, and he'd come in off the bike and he went out to walk 10K. Now, bear in mind, he hadn't walked for 25 years. At 7 kilometres, he stopped and he had a group of people with him, including myself, and he took his shoes and socks off. And his feet weren't just blistered. I mean, they were just raw. The skin was off the feet completely. And I said to him, oh my goodness, John, you know, what are you going to do? And he couldn't do anything else. He was going to finish. So he put his socks and shoes back on. And the thing that I learned that day for John was that his ability to bring everything back to just one more step is the absolute best I've ever seen of someone being able to really stay in the present. It's really difficult to do when you think about all of the challenges you're going to have, but his ability to bring that back to one more step, despite the amount of pain he was in, and get that done is something I'll never forget. And just, you know, really reinforced that mindset thing that I'm so passionate about.
That's so interesting. Like, I remember, you know, seeing his story of, you know, and I think you might have explained it to us at a conference that we were at, but then all of a sudden he just wheeled out onto the stage. And, and it's just a person that has no use of their legs and has done Ironmans and everything in a wheelchair, and then stands up on stage. Like, what? Like, how do you even, that's mind-boggling in itself.
Yeah, could just left it at that. It would have been a fantastic presentation.
yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, he is certainly an inspiring guy, and it's interesting to see that, you know, you're there alongside him as well, and that you're equally inspiring. And I suppose it's a odd thing, like, you know, and I think, you know, you and I might have had a chat once in the past where it's like you sort of said, well, I'm just the man. And it's like, yeah, it's so interesting to think that you, the way that you've come to build your life and the way that you have turned up to all of these different situations, and perhaps not wasting a whole lot of energy on those limiting beliefs or on excuses, and just getting it done, is a powerful lesson for everybody, that anybody can be that inspiring person following their own path if you can just bring the same amount of energy that you would expend on why it can't be done to just those next steps.
Yeah, and I think, as I said before, I mean, for some reason, I've always been attracted to mentors that actually inspire me. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, it became very clear to me early in the piece that you need to surround yourself with the right people, but you need to surround yourself with people that also tell you the truth.
Mm.
And, you know, I think so many people will gravitate to people that will reinforce their, I suppose, their fears or their limiting beliefs or whatever. And, you know, I think that one of the things I've done well is had a lot of people in my life that have pulled me up when I'm, you know, just not living what I should be living. And, you know, you got to be brave enough to accept that. But when you do that, you'll find yourself surrounded with really passionate, energetic, you know, driven people. And that just feeds you the energy, which is a word that you use a lot, the energy that you need when things get tough, because they do, because we're not talking about fantasy land. Not everything's always really good. Mm. And you do need to have those people around you. And again, I'd just use John as an example, because a few years ago, I turned up at Port Macquarie for Ironman Australia and got sick and couldn't start, which was pretty depressing after a few months of preparing. And I was sort of moping around a bit, which I don't normally do. And I rang John, which is the wrong person to ring, by the way. And I rang him and started telling this story about how, you know, I was the fittest I've ever been. I turned up for the race. I got sick on Friday. I was walking around Saturday night. I made the decision to pull out at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday on the day of the race. And he listened to all this. And then he just said, just another challenge. I went, oh God, okay, fair enough. Snapped straight out of it. Next day, entered Ironman Cairns, which is a few weeks later, and went and did that one and did okay. So, you know, once again, he didn't go, Paul, that's terrible. You know, I can imagine how disappointed you would have been after all that effort. It was just like, just another challenge, mate. In other words, okay, it's over, get on with it. Move on, do something different. And they're the sort of people you need to find, because they will check you really quick rather than allowing you to wallow in that. Quite rightly, I had a good reason to be disappointed, but it passed. I couldn't do anything about it. And sometimes all of us, including me, just need that check to say, right, that's it, done, go and do something else.
And like you said, though, like being big enough or courageous enough to accept it rather than trying to be like, no, I deserve to be upset or whatever else. Like, no, actually, it helps me to feel better right now, and I want to feel good, and I might as well get onto the next challenge, because you could have moped for months and not gone to Cairns at all.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Another 12 months and been thinking about it.
So you're senior executive, killing it, you know, strength to strength to strength. Had it been burning, like a burning desire, or was there like a spark of inspiration, the idea of, you know, because your life is very inspirational and you had been on stage a lot from a conference's perspective, and you know, certainly I'm inspired in the crowd. So was it like, you know, burning away inside of you, or a spark to then make that leap from the role to go and be a speaker and chase down, you know, this freelance life that you're doing now?
Yeah, I think so. There comes a point where, I mean, I was in the role for 21 years, which is a pretty long time, and always conscious of the fact that, and I don't think this was the case, but others would be the judge of that. But well, you get to the point where you think, I really don't want to be around too long. I always want to make sure that I'm making a contribution. So that's the first thing. The second thing was that the time was probably right, and I did want to try and do some stuff. I'm really passionate about coaching. I love the coaching clients I've got. I've got a framework that I work with them with. And I knew that I'd be able to provide to some organizations this issue around the sales leadership. You know, things you talked about, like the limiting beliefs, you know, clearly understanding what a sales process is. How does a proper business development activity take place? All of those kind of things. So I can workshop those things into an organization and help them, I think. And the public speaking, I think that I did a little video when I left that explained what I was going to do. And I think probably because I had the real joy and benefit of running those conferences at Heritage for a long time, where you kind of pick a theme and then do a keynote around that theme and stuff like that. I have the ability to use my own experiences as part of that, but also be able to tailor different keynote speaks around whatever the conference theme is. So I thought that'd be just an interesting sort of angle, as opposed to a lot of keynote speakers who are fantastic, who just have their story to tell. Mm-hmm. So, and I thought that if I'm going to do it, I need to get out and do it now, and continue with the things I really love doing. So that was the plan.
I like it. And so if you had to define happiness, so two-part question, are you happy, and how would you define happiness?
Yes. I mean, as I said, I am happy. I think that, you know, we see enough around us to know that that life is short, and there is no time to be wasting. And for some reason, I've always had that mindset that time's not to be wasted. We have to make the most of every opportunity. And I think that what makes me happy is being able to say yes to as many things as I want to do, as opposed to putting things off. The second thing is, and I did a conference keynote a few years ago about the secrets of success. And I don't think there really are a lot of secrets, and I won't go into that. But the key point at the end of that speech was, what is the secret of success? And I think it is about living life with no regrets. Mm-hmm. And I often say to my wife that when I get to the end of my life, if you have that moment where you could reflect, I'm sure I won't be able to say I've done every single thing that I want to do, but I'm damn well going to try to make sure I've done most of what I can to make sure I get everything done that I want to do. So it's about living life with no regrets. You don't want to be looking back saying, I wish I'd done that, or I wish I'd done this, and oh, how would that have gone if I'd have done it? You know, anytime I get an idea of somewhere I want to go, something I want to do, some challenge I want to present myself, I just usually jump in and work out how I'm going to do it later.
I share that. Belief. I remember coming across a quote once, and I can't exactly remember, but it was something about someone being on their deathbed and having the dreams of all their dreams, the ghosts of their dreams standing around the bed saying, we came to you. We came to specifically you, and you could have breathed life into us, and you didn't. Mm. I jump into a lot of different things because I want to leave it all on the field. I don't know how long I get. This could be the last day right now. Like, and a lot of people haven't been lucky enough to make it to their 35th birthday. So you do need to make the most of it. We all have an expiry date, but that is something that I want to breathe life into all of my dreams. Like that whole, Wayne Bennett, don't die with the music still in you.
Yeah.
I like that. And so you kind of have almost answered one of the questions I like to ask. Like if we into the time machine to the 100th birthday and you were looking back, you know, is that what you would want to have achieved? Like, is it just that you ended with not having, you know, finishing the game with regret?
Exactly right. I mean, I think that I hope that for as long as I can go on, that I'll be still continuing to push the challenges and still do things. You know, like you get to the point where, you know, even with my hobby with Ironman, you say, people said to me, well, you know, how long do you want to keep doing this for? And I go, as long as I can. To me, it's almost a silly question, but for some people I can say, well, they're thinking, why do you want to keep pushing yourself like that? The same thing in people's careers. Why do you want to keep pushing yourself? Well, because that's what keeps you alive. So I'd hope that as long as I possibly can, right up until my 100th birthday, I'll still be trying new challenges. But as I said before, if it is a time of reflection, I want to know that I've done as many things as I could possibly do.
I like it. My nana's just turned 100 recently. That's we had a big fantastic. Party for her. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. But you know, she's still out there playing bowls, you know, a couple of times a week, catching up with friends, doing things. That's something that she has said. It's like, you need to just keep living your life. Like, you actually have to really live your life. It's a weird thing because, you know, at times you can be taught that it's like, get to retirement and then you'll sit on a beach or you'll just sit or you'll do something else. But I think it's important to keep driving your life and driving your life in terms of your purpose and your passions. That your career might be your passion, but just like you've done, you know, you could continue to be a speaker and an Ironman, and there's Ironmen that are probably what, 90 still crossing the finish line. I don't know who the oldest Ironman is. Well,
certainly some in their 80s. I mean, it's interesting. I'm sure you've seen this in your working career. There's a lot of people who are defined by one area of their life, which is another kind of topic, I guess, in a way. But, you know, you see a lot of people who might be a CEO or an executive or whatever, and you see them retire and they're no longer sure who they are anymore. And the other thing, you've known me for a long time. I mean, during my time as an executive, it wasn't the ego, it wasn't the position, that wasn't what drove me in that particular role. It was, I enjoyed the organization I was with. I enjoyed the people I work with at all levels, and I enjoyed contributing back. And that's what I enjoyed. It wasn't about that, but that wasn't me. I wasn't not just defined as one dimension. I think that the people I see are the happiest who are the ones that understand that it's part of what they do. So if you say, who is Paul? Well, he was an executive. He's a father. He's a husband, he's a Ironman triathlete, does these things. It's all of those things. So when you stop doing one of those, you don't lose your identity. You've still got a whole range of things that make you up who you are. And you don't lose that sort of sense of identity because you're multifaceted. You're not one dimensional, as in everything is focused on one particular area of your life. And when you see people like that afterwards, it's a little bit sad that they're not they lose that sort of spark because they no longer have the position, if that's what made them feel good about themselves. And that was never part of it for me. It was just part of what I did, as much as I loved it, as much as I put my heart and soul and energy into it. Just it's part of my life. It's not everything. So therefore, yeah, it made that transition much easier because, you know, I'm still me.
Mm. That's really powerful. I mean, and you hear that, like, some people pass away after they retire, or, you know, I know that, like, the men's sheds thing. I remember in, you know, early days in banking, you know, meeting people from like the men's sheds, and how, you know, they were starting to get together to try and learn what this purpose might be now that, you know, I'm not this.
Redefine their identity.
Yes. Yes. And so that's something that's really big because, you know, even like a purpose or, you know, I'm trying to drive somewhere. A lot of people aren't necessarily either investing the time, or they might be too exhausted from doing things that they're not enjoying, to actually find out what else they like. They, you know, you seem to have been engaged in this very full life, you know, whether maybe sport has done a lot to bring that to you, family. You seem to be able to get the balance, which is really intriguing considering that Ironman is so full on, like it's almost like would tip most people out of balance. I remember watching a video of you, like the food you had to eat in a day, and just how crazy that amount of food was, and fitting it all in and structure and whatever else. But you seem to have gotten that.
Yeah, I'm fascinated, Tom, by this idea of balance, because I mean, a lot of people, and again, you know, as years have gone on, I've stopped answering some of the questions where I had people say to me, I'd love to do that if I had the time. And I always just think, well, you know, just 24 hours in a day. And so life is about balance. And you know, when I was early in my career as an executive, you know, your life does get out of balance a bit, you know, when you're really, you know, pedaling hard to get the skills you need and learning and stuff like that. Something has to give. And if you want to be successful, and you want to achieve something, whatever it is, if it's your personal life or if it's in your work life or whatever, and you need to direct a little bit more of your energy in that direction for that period of time, that's what you need to do. And things will slightly get out of balance. But I've been very conscious, you know, over the last many, many years of making sure my life is in balance. So yes, you're right. So when I'm training for an Ironman, it can be up to 20 hours a week, but the time's there. But it means I get up early in the morning and I don't waste time and I don't spend a lot of time watching TV. And you know, you'll find the balance to do it. And, you know, I've been able to do that and have a family and have a busy role and do all those things and still do other stuff too. I mean, I'm fanatical heavy metal music listener. You know, I love reading autobiographies. I'm reading a fantastic one at the moment called You Can't Hurt Me, David Goggins.
Oh, yeah, it's good. Seen it. I've heard your audiobook. Yeah, that's a heavy story. Holy gosh.
It's a heavy, heavy story, particularly at the beginning. But, you know, when you read some of his things he's done, you think, oh, well, I'm not that tough after all. You know, like it's just hard, hard stuff. And but it really leans to the what's humanly possible. And so those sorts of things inspire me. So I better do all those things and you get a nice balance of what you're doing and making sure you take downtime and look after yourself and always conscious of having, you know, holidays and those sorts of things that are important too. So it's not, don't get too just sort of too focused in one direction. Otherwise it causes a problem.
So, and you talked about self-awareness before. And so like, I'm imagining like, you know, for people listening or the people that you might mention, and I suppose everyone goes through it at a time or another where it's like, I don't have time or I can't fit it in, or I can't do the things I want to do, or I can't have the massage or the 5 minutes to relax in the hammock. But if you look at someone's 30-day calendar or even a week or a day, and, you know, you mentioned TV and I really don't watch TV. Like it's very rare that I'll find myself in TV because my TV time's here podcasting, which I love. So I would, it's almost like I could rank all of the activities. And if I'm going to say I don't have enough time, I might as well chop away the activities that aren't bringing me the maximum level of joy or enjoyment and fill those times through planning. At least some planning has to take place with the stuff that actually matters to me. If I judged on how I'm spending my time based on the reward I get from it, well, that makes sense. And it sounds like you've been able to do that, like as in design a life and include all the stuff that actually matters and chop away the stuff that maybe doesn't so much.
Yeah, you've got to be honest with yourself. I guess that's the thing. And once again, it's got to be something you want to do. So, I mean, to use the example of, you know, when I was working in my full-time role there and I was also, you know, had a family and also, you know, doing Ironman on the side, there are times that I would plan in my diary when I was going to do my training sessions and I'd be disciplined about it. So if it meant that I had a busy week and I needed to fit a run in and it needed to be in the middle of the day, even if it was in February. And it was, I had that gap in the middle of the day and it was 12:30. I'd stop what I was doing. I'd go and get changed. I'd do the run. I'd come back. I'd shower and I'd come back and it'd be done. If I didn't do that, that hour would disappear anyway. As we know, the time will disappear. And I think you really got to be disciplined. I mean, ages ago, I went to some sort of seminar where most of the speakers weren't that great, but I do remember one guy, it was well before this sort of, you know, people thinking about their depression and all this sort of stuff. And he was focused on, he said, I deal with a lot of executives and CEOs who are just so busy, they just don't have time for downtime. And he said that what I say to them is open up your diary, look 2 months ahead, block out a weekend, go away with the family, block out a holiday. And I think that idea of planning, where you actually, if you're going to look after yourself, you need to make sure you take that downtime, you plan ahead to do it, and then treat it like any other appointment you have, and you'll find the time to do it. If you wait until Friday to decide whether or not you're going to do it on Saturday, you'll find some reason why you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And once again, it's just one of those things that stuck in my head and one of the things that I've always done. I've always planned ahead. I mean, you know, planned ahead various things over the next sort of 18 months. It's just what we do as a family, and it's just what I do individually to make sure I know what events I want to do and when we might want to do a bit of travel, all that kind of stuff. If you don't plan, then you just doesn't get done. It again, it's so simple, but the discipline of actually doing it is what makes it clever in some cases.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing too. I think it was Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People that kind of just transformed my life. And I remember, you know, this whole like, you know, the quadrants and actually carving out time for planning so that you're not just always fighting fires. And in your personal life or in your actual life, if you're not making time for planning, well, then you probably are just bouncing from one thing to the next to the next. And there's going to be inefficiencies. So you can't plan for everything because life happens. But it does sound to me that you have that level of planning, you have an awareness of what you want, and then you've gone and sought out the things that you enjoy, and then you have the discipline to honor those commitments to yourself. Like it's hot, it's February, you don't want to go for a run. You honor it because you know it is what you actually want. You've put it in there in the plan for a reason. And so honoring that, like that's an interesting thing that you've had that discipline.
Yeah, it's whether it's a work commitment or it's a hobby commitment, like I was talking about before. If I know that for example, my next big event will be Ironman Australia in on the 2nd of May, I think it is. So I already have planned a program through to that. And once that clicks in, and you know, like no one is perfect, and there'll be times where for some reason you don't execute every session you're planning on doing, but once I make my mind up to do that, like you say, I honor it, I give it the discipline to make sure that I follow that through, because I know that if I don't, I'll get to that day and the day is going to be harder than it needs to be. And I think you got to remember, it's just like you said, the word you use a lot of, which I really like, is purpose. What is the purpose of it? Why am I doing it? And I'm doing it because it's something that makes me feel good. It's something that challenges me. It's something that brings out that competitive spirit in me. It's an achievement. So I know that if my purpose is to do that, then I have to make sure I give it the respect it deserves and actually follow through and do it. Otherwise, you know, you just get there and start making excuses. So that discipline is pretty important.
I like it. And so you've lived this great life, the mindset has been like a golden thread throughout, but if you were to hop to the time machine and go back to talk to your 18-year-old self, would there be any advice that you would share?
Well, I think I touched on it before, that you know, I guess that probably I don't know why, whether good fortune or whatever, or whether there was just something about how I was influenced by the right people. But I would say, as an 18-year-old, I'd say a few things. First of all, you know, find some mentors that can share their experience with you and be open to that. And I think sometimes as an 18-year-old, I know I was a pretty immature 18-year-old, probably even a few more years later than that too. But, you know, be open to those mentors would be the first thing. And the second thing is, you know, surround yourself with people that are going to be honest with you, that will tell you the truth, that will challenge you as well. Don't surround yourself with people who will tell you what you want to hear. And I think that, you just know you've got to work hard. There are no free rides in life, and there are no free kicks. And I think that, I'm sure you do too, where you come across people who will want to work hard for a little while, but then think they've made it, and therefore everything else should just flow on from that. And life is not like that. I mean, the way that I describe life in one of the talks I did a little while ago is probably an interesting thing for you. As I say, that life is, at one end, you've got, you know, hopefully not much more than this, you know, 5% of really tough stuff, which is bad things happen and all that sort of stuff. We all have some form of tragedy, things that don't go well, you know, whatever that might be at one end. At the other end, you've got this area of excitement, which is, you know, holidays, which is when things do go well, which is, you know, promotions, whatever that might be. And in the middle is stuff, which is life.
And I think it's a bell curve. I love that bell curve because it's my name.
That bit in there, that 80%, 85%, what it is, if you want to truly be happy and truly do things, you've got to learn how to enjoy the mundane part, which is where you just turn up at work every day and you've got the same challenges coming at you. And you've got to enjoy the people that you work with. You've got to enjoy every little bit of it, because that's the bit where you're going to be living most of your life. If you're one of those sort of people that don't deal with that and don't don't handle that well, and they're always looking for the bit of excitement at the other end, life's pretty tough. I mean, you do need to work hard, and you do need to keep pushing yourself, and that's where the real enjoyment comes, because the harder you work, the luckier you get, you know that. So I think that, you know, the more you do that, the more you appreciate the good times, because you've worked for it.
I like that. I like that. And so it's like switching your perspective somewhat to really like turn that whole middle section into an enjoyable thing. So you're not just dealing with only the 5% of happiness now. You know, you're actually dealing with, what would that be, 95%?
Yeah.
You know, the time that you're actually pretty happy. And if anybody could say that their life score was in the 90s of percentage of happiness, that's a pretty good life. That's a pretty good, that's a lot of good times.
I like that. I think that, you know, everyone is like that. You've seen there's lots of this stuff where you see the tip of the iceberg, and you see someone that's really successful, and you see the thing, you think, oh, life must be really good for you. You don't see all the work that's gone in underneath it. You know, the sacrifices, the hard work, the learning they've had to do, whatever that, the challenges they've had, the tough times they've had to go through. You don't see any of that. You just see the bit that says, oh, you know, this is good. But, you know, for all of us, you know, we've got stuff that's sometimes a grind, and how you mentally deal with that and enjoy it to the degree. You don't enjoy everything. Like, there's lots of things in my working life that I thought, geez, I wish I didn't have to do this, but it's part of it. And you can't just do the bits of your life you want to do. You got to do all of it. And that can be a challenge at times, but it's your attitude towards it. I mean, in the book that we wrote, I wrote a chapter on, you know, that sort of stuff. And I talked about using humor in the workplace, which has always been my default position, and sometimes not to my benefit, by the way. So you got to sometimes know when is the right time to be lighthearted and when isn't. But for under I don't like using the word stress, but under difficult times, often I've reverted to humor or being lighthearted about it, and that's the way I deal with it. So I think, you know, life can be so, you know, mundane at times. If you can't find some fun in it and have fun with the people around you while you're doing it, then you need to go and find something else that you do find it in.
Yeah, that's the thing too, isn't it, though? It's like, you know, like you can work to turn that middle part that you're mentioning into something that you enjoy and make the most of it, and so that way you're not suffering constantly. But then at the same time, you may be not in the right place. Like, you know, like pretty well everyone that I come into contact with, it's like, you know, so after a bit of time, what would you do if you could do anything? And some people would love to be out with animals or out in working in the garden, and they're in an office and they just don't like being in the office. Well, it's okay. Look for that open door. You're talking about open doors before. If you're not looking for them and all you're doing is looking at your shoes and kicking rocks, you're probably not going to be enjoying life. So look for the open doors, take some actions, you know, get some self-awareness as to what it is that you enjoy, and then take action to get there. Like, and if you're not going to take action to get there, you might as well be happy where you are.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the number of people I've sat down with, and they're clearly not happy with what they're doing. And you say to them, well, what is it? Well, I really don't enjoy what I do. You know, I really hate it. I don't want to be here. And, you know, the quick default position is, you know, if you don't want to be here, then you shouldn't be. But what I would try to do is I normally say to them, look, if you're not happy, you know, you need to try and be clear and understand what it is that you actually want to do. That's the first thing. And if you see this thing that you think you'd really prefer to do and you'd like to do, and that'll bring you happiness and give you purpose and all that sort of stuff, then what are you prepared to do to get it? Because it's not going to just drop in your lap. So that's the first thing. So if you're not happy and you want to do something else, you need to be clear on what it is. You know, what are you prepared to do? What sacrifice are you prepared to make? What are you prepared to learn? You know, who are you going to go and try and get help from? Whatever that might be. And then the third thing is, and just take some action.
Mm.
Don't sit around being unhappy, because as we were just discussing before, life's way too short for that.
Mm.
You know, I've seen people, you know, wallow in a role they really hate for a few years, and I'm thinking that's just no way to live. Just no way to live, and it disappoints me. And as much as I can't understand why people do that, I still find it hard to see that when I see people experiencing something they don't want to be doing.
Yeah, I agree. It is really hard to see. And you want to free them from it, but it is one of those things that they have to do it themselves, actually. They do need to. So you talked a couple of times about surrounding yourself with the right people. You know, it's an interesting concept. Like, it makes sense. Like, you know, put yourself around other people that are going to help you grow. I love the idea of them being honest with you and giving you the feedback that you need when you need it. But, you know, do you have any advice for people that are listening that are thinking like, well, how do I, you know, gravitate to these people? Like, have you come across people, whether it's a John McClane or somebody else, and that person resonates with you and you think, well, I'm going to reach out. I'm going to keep reaching out. Or like, what's the process to surround yourself with those people?
I think the first thing is that, I suppose the lights on moment for that is that you've got to actually want to do it. So you've got to be serious about you're actually going to do it. And I think that in any environment you're in, whether it's a work environment or whether it's a group of your friends or whether it's external from that, there are plenty of opportunities to find people that are positive, have a good attitude, and are actually doing something interesting. And gravitate towards those people. And we said before that a lot of people will, the comment, misery loves company. You know how people who are miserable will gravitate to other people who are miserable, and happy, energetic, positive people will gravitate to. So if you're somewhere in between and you're trying to make that shift, because I think from a psychology point of view, some people are more lean towards that sort of, you know, that fear and that sort of negativity, and that gives them a level of comfort, and other people lean the other way. So if you're not in either of those camps, you're somewhere in that continuum in the middle, and you've got to force yourself, you've got to actively seek out those people, and they're there. And in amongst your friends as well. I mean, I don't know what, this probably doesn't sound too great, I know, but over the years there have been people I've come in contact with that are negative that gradually just disappear out of my life. And the friends that I have now are people that are positive and energetic and whatever, people I feel good around and that sort of stuff. You just once again, it's that time thing. You need to sort of move from those sort of people. So, and then I think it's a matter of there's so much information around these days. There's great podcasts. There's so much information where you can go sourcing some, get a really basic understanding of the psychology of why you're thinking in certain ways. And then you can start to train yourself to know when the triggers are there, so you can look to be more positive, and then source out people that you come. All of us have a circle of people that we come in contact with, and we decide cherry pick which ones we want to be around. And it doesn't happen overnight. But you will gradually build this sort of circle of friends or business acquaintances or mentors or whatever it might be. But the one basic thing I could say is if you are struggling to build that ring of people around you, go and source out a mentor that could actually guide you and hold you accountable for not only what you're doing, but what you're thinking as well. With the people that I coach, it's really about holding them accountable. And by the next time we chat, we've said that you're going to try these things or do these things. Then when we get together, we'll be talking about that. Mm. And that is just so positive reinforcement when they've gone away, tried something. It doesn't matter whether it goes well or not. The fact that they've gone out and tried something, then they've got an experience they can relate to either improve on or try something different.
I like that. So it's almost like your vibe attracts your tribe. And So if you're wanting to get to that point where you're having the positive people, perhaps
a horrible thing though, isn't it? Misery loves company. I shouldn't have said that. But
well, but then again, like if you're looking around.
The other extreme is the better one.
Yeah, and you can change. Like that's the beautiful thing is that we can change. We can find ourselves in a dark place. Like I follow a guy on Twitter and on a few other platforms, Grant Cardone, and you know he was in this dark place and he was hanging around with drug dealers and he was doing drugs himself. And all of a sudden he's on his pathway to being a billionaire right now. But he had to go and change within himself and change his own actions and change his perspective. But I also really like the idea that you don't have to do it all yourself. So you can go and get a mentor or a coach. But like you mentioned though, you can get that person. They're not going to pop you on the back of the pony and take you all the way to the fair. You have to do the work. You have to put the action in and do the, make the changes yourself as well. But it's possible to change.
And there's, I think as I said before, there's so many stories, like the one you mentioned before is a great one. That one of the ones I came across early, very early in the piece when I was running conferences, we had the guy Justin Herald. And mm-hmm. I'd been at an airport and I'd bought his little book, It's All About Attitude, which really cracked me up. Really easy read. His story of going from basically he was going nowhere to investing $20 and designing T-shirts with funny logos on and stuff like that. And all about attitude. And I thought, this sounds like something that's coming out of my head, you know, how you can really relate to something like that. And that idea that attitude is everything. It might not be everything, but if you start with a good attitude, you're a long way ahead. Mm. And if you haven't got it, you know, how are you going to get yourself into a positive mindset and a positive attitude most of the time, and check yourself when you feel yourself slipping back, is a really good start to really improving your life. Again, it sounds simple, but it does take some discipline.
I love it. Paul, this has been the coolest catch up. I've had so much fun chatting and getting to know more about you. And I know that a lot of people are going to get a lot out of this. So I really do appreciate you sharing your valuable time. But for people that would want to follow on the journey, perhaps work with you as a coach, how might they find you to be able to work with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. So just you can look up my LinkedIn page. It's pretty easy. I'm also on Facebook, so you can find me on there as well. I've got an email I'll be happy to share if anyone wanted to private message me. That'd be good. It has been great chatting. It's always great to chat to you, Tom. You're one of the people I really like. You're so positive. It's really good to talk to you. We could have talked all night, I know, once we got started, because we're those kind of people, but it has been terrific, and I really do appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with me.
Thanks for your time, Paul. And so thank you so much for everybody tuning in for another episode. I'm Tom Bell. This podcast is all dedicated to purpose, passion, and inspiring you to live a life that you truly love. But again, I look forward to catching you on the next episode. Talk soon.